fugitive.
Once there was a way to get back homeward. Once there was a way to get back home. Sleep pretty darling, do not cry. And I will sing a lullaby.
All right, and the good news for you folks, I won't sing you a lullaby. Hi everybody, the grand finale, Talking Fugitive with Kitty and Bobby and Ken, on the air for not just the usual 30 minutes, but the 60 minute spectacular. And you can be a part of it if you want to. 800-407-KSAV. I almost forgot the number. If you want to join in the conversation, we've got some extra time tonight. This is where the fugitive, where it all ends, and I think people are probably tuning in tonight to make sure that we really do end once and for all. So let's welcome the three musketeers back and turn it over here to Bobby Neer.
Thanks, Dave. 46 and a half years ago, The Fugitive premiered on ABC TV. At that time, no doubt, the producers were just hoping for an extension into a full season. As things turns out, it went just a little longer than that, to four full seasons, before making TV history by providing an end to the series. Then it went into sort of a long hibernation until the 90s, when the Arts and Entertainment Network, more popularly known as A&E, began running reruns of the original series. That was enormously popular, very surprisingly, and that led to Ed Robertson, who has a show on KSAV currently, writing his book, The Fugitive Recaptured, that chronicled every single episode of the original series. Not surprisingly, Hollywood took notice of all of this renewed interest in an almost 30-year-old TV series, and we had the feature film version of The Fugitive starring Harrison Ford, an enormous success then and right up until today, where it is still a regular part of most cable TV movie schedules. A short-lived TV series remake of the same name, filmed in Everett, Washington, aired on CBS during the 2000-2001 TV season and starred Tim Daly. Unfortunately, CBS canceled the series after one season with a total of 22 episodes and no resolution to the series, the only time the series has failed to be a success. In October of 2003, I created the Yahoo discussion group, The Fugitive Views and Reviews, where we set out to review all of the 120 episodes of the original series, and that's just what we did, concluding in December of last year. Then in November of 2005, we began this very internet radio program, Talking Fugitive, and brought the series that started long before there was even an internet into a new dimension. So obviously The Fugitive is a lot like the Energizer Bunny. It just keeps going and going and going, fading from sight every now and then, but always coming back later in some other incarnation. Tonight is one of those times when the series is fading away again, as we conclude this program after 3.5 years and 78 programs. In the final section of this special hour-long show, we will assign our own final rating to the series in general, taking into account all the seasons and the endless ups and downs along the way. But first, we have some unfinished business, so let's get started on that right now. In our last program, Act 4 of The Judgment, we watched Richard Kimball walk triumphantly out of the courthouse, a free man, and although he walked away down the street with the wrong woman on his arm, as far as we are concerned, he had at least gained his freedom. End of story. Well, at least for the producers, it was the end of the story. But in real life, it just doesn't happen that way. There is a story beyond the finale. The Fugitive, despite endless denials by its creator, Roy Huggins, is loosely based on the real-life story of Sam Shepard, who was an American osteopathic physician involved in a famous and controversial murder trial in the mid-50s, when he was convicted of the murder of his pregnant wife, Marilyn. Shepard had always claimed he was innocent and that the murder was committed not by a one-armed man, but by a bushy-haired intruder who he had struggled with. Shepard served over a decade in the Ohio penitentiary before his 1954 conviction was overturned and declared a miscarriage of justice. In 1966, he was acquitted in a new trial. Shepard didn't escape to run around the country like Richard Kimball would do a decade later, but he did get out of prison eventually thanks to his soon-to-be-very-famous defense attorney, F. Lee Bailey, who filed suit in federal court claiming Dr. Sam Shepard was denied his constitutional rights to a fair trial. District Court Judge Carl Weinman agreed, calling the Shepard trial a mockery of justice, and he ordered Shepard released from prison. Shepard was finally exonerated after more than 12 years and helped write the book Endure and Conquer, which presented his side of the case and gave insight into his years in prison. He also returned briefly to medicine in Youngstown, Ohio, but he was sued twice for medical malpractice by the estates of dead patients. But unfortunately for Sam Shepard, things never went well for him after he got out of prison. Later, to make ends meet, Shepard was even briefly a professional wrestler, going by the ring name The Killer. Dr. Shepard, having become an alcoholic, died as a result of liver failure, penniless, and still professing his innocence just 4 years after his release from prison on April 6, 1970. Well, no pro wrestling in Kimball's future. He seems quite content walking down that street in Stafford. But what lies ahead? Is it really possible to just pick up the pieces of your prior life and be a doctor again and simply ignore all the notoriety you gained from the past? And what about the man who pursued you all those years? At the end of the series, Kimball and Gerard shake hands. Is that it? Is it really that simple? No payoff to and from the police lieutenant obsessed with his capture who made it all possible? Can Gerard go back and pick up the pieces of his own life with his now estranged wife? He walks away too a free man. I don't know. I wonder about that. So last year, I asked the only person I know with the writing ability and the imagination to fill in the blanks, and that person is Kitty. Earlier during our group discussion, she had written a story called For Better, For Worse, which showed us a better and much happier time in the Kimball courtship and marriage, and reunited Richard with his brother Ray, who was introduced in the series back in season one, and then totally ignored like he never existed. Last December, as we reached the end of the series, Kitty wrote another story called From Here On Out, which detailed what happened to the main characters after the judgment. Those stories are permanently archived at the Fugitive User Reviews in the Files section and are well worth reading. But this is the first time we've had a chance to discuss this at length on this show. So I've asked Kitty to give us, in the limited time we have here, the condensed version of just what did happen to the main characters. The one-armed man is dead, so we don't need to worry about him. But what about Kimball and Gerard? Is there life after the fugitive ends? And what was it like? Or did Richard Kimball end up like Dr. Sam Shepard? Kitty?
Well, thanks, Bobby. Hello?
Are you there? Go ahead.
Okay. I thought you got disconnected there for a second. Okay. Thank you. Once again, thanks for that nice introduction. And I wanted to just first of all talk a little bit about the first story that I penned called For Better, For Worse. Because one of the things about that series that always bothered me was how Helen Kimball was treated. She was treated basically as nothing more than a prop in the series. We've talked about that at length. When she gets killed, I don't think anybody is really all that upset about it. And it seems like Richard Kimball, for protesting his innocence, he doesn't even seem that upset that his wife is dead. He just seems more upset that he got blamed for it. So I really took it upon myself to really kind of delve a little bit into Helen. I only had limited resources on because she was talked about so little in that series. But one of the things that's very, evident that we see in Girl in Little Egypt is that she has lost a child and she is just completely devastated by it, and she cannot have any more kids, and this really kind of drives her a little bit over the edge. The other insight we have into Helen is in season two in The Survivors, where we get a brief recording of her voice where she is telling her mother, and interestingly enough, in that recording, she does not sound like an out-of-control person. She actually sounds very calm and rational. And one of the things that she says in that recording was that things had not been the same between her and Richard since she lost the baby. And, you know, which implies that there's two sides to the story, that, you know, and unfortunately we never got to see it. And so in that, what I took from that, I basically decided to tell a story of a woman and, you know, and of Richard, Helen and Richard, who had been married for quite some time. They had tried to have kids. I surmised that she must have suffered some miscarriages. The pregnancies had been few and far between. I think she had probably suffered. I deducted that this was a woman who probably suffered, you know, with fertility problems, obviously. And when she lost this kid, it really, really devastated her, because it was very evident to me in throughout the series that children were an important part to Richard, because not only did he like kids, he obviously liked kids a lot because he was a pediatrician. And I think that put a little bit extra pressure on her. But I also delved into that they had a very happy, loving marriage initially. I did show their courtship as being very happy, because obviously I figured he had to have married her for a reason. He must have loved her. There must have been something wonderful about this person. So that was basically how I painted that. With Ray, I did have him reunited with Ray, because I thought it was really lousy that you had this other character that certainly could have been brought back. I mean, they brought the actor back, so it's not like Andrew Prine was not available to do other episodes, since he came back as a different character later on. You know, we saw Donna periodically in that series. I saw no reason why Ray could not have been incorporated somewhere in there as well. I had him find Ray in, of all places, Las Vegas. It seemed like with Ray, the way he was in that one episode, where he went home is the hunted, Ray seemed like the kind of person who was prone to getting into trouble. Gerard had, it sounded like he'd kind of had some run-ins with Gerard himself. So it seemed Las Vegas was a perfect place for Ray to end up, where he inadvertently ends up getting involved with the daughter of a gangster and falls head over heels in love with her, and she falls for him. Interestingly enough, you know, I had never seen the episode A Clean and Quiet Town, and yet my story ended up playing out with just one or two similarities to that episode. So I thought that was a little strange when I saw that episode for the first time. But anyway, Ray basically ended up marrying this young woman, and they went off to start a new life together. And because I really felt that Ray deserved something more than to just, you know, be seen, you know, shaking hands with Richard at the end of Home is the Hunted. So, and the two of them and Gerard did end up having a little adventure with the gangsters. But if you want to know all the details, you'll have to go to the website and read it. Or you can buy our latest book, the fourth installment of Fugitive Views and Reviews. It is in there. As well as this next story that I penned called From Here On Out, which is about what happened afterwards. I really was disappointed with the ending. I did not like how Gerard seemed to get off scot-free at the end. There he is, smiling, looking on, as Bobby put it, like a guy who is watching his son graduate from college, you know, which is just, was just ridiculous. You know, what are we supposed to conclude from that, that they're going to become bowling buddies now? And I thought it was also a shame that we never got to see anything more of Gerard's home life with his wife and his children. We only saw one child in that one episode that we saw where Kurt Russell played his son, but when he's talking to Marie, he refers to their kids as the children, so it's implied there is more than one. I really felt that Marie deserved better than what Gerard had been giving her for all these years. He basically was going off to chase Kimball all over the country while neglecting her and the kids. And it seemed to me that this would just be the final straw, that not only does he catch Kimball, but when he finally does catch Kimball, we find out that all along he really was chasing an innocent guy all over the country and wasting the taxpayers' dollars to do so. I also had a problem with how they initially showed the crime. I mean, you had Gerard saying that he interviewed 83 men, one-armed men at that, and we had the initial cause of Helen's death as strangulation, and yet we find out in the final analysis that she got hit over the head with a lamp. Not only was she hit over the head with a lamp, but the one-armed man didn't even have a glove on when he hit her over the head with the lamp. So my question was, did nobody ever think to dust for fingerprints? You know, this man is the lead investigator on this case. And it seemed to me that we got a lot of shoddy police work going on here, and he doesn't. I really honestly believe that he should not get off that easy. So after all of that happened, I had it where he went back to the station and was told by his boss, Captain Carpenter, that he is currently on suspension, and they're looking. He's under investigation with Internal Affairs, and they've got, you know, they've got the DA and the state attorney general breathing down their backs for what's happened. And when he gets home, he is told by Marie that she is leaving him. I know I was taken to task on the board by saying that they thought it was unrealistic that that Marie would actually leave him because of the stigma of the so-called stigma of divorce back in the 60s. I personally don't really think too much about the so-called stigma of divorce because I've known plenty of people who got divorced long before 1970, and they certainly never cared about whether or not there was a stigma. In the final analysis, back before 1970, if a woman had finally decided she had enough, and she didn't care what the neighbors thought about what she was doing. And that was how I basically portrayed Marie Gerard. She didn't care anymore what anybody said. She just wanted to get Phil out of her life because he had neglected everybody. And for what? To go chase an innocent man all over the country to satisfy this ego of his. And, you know, and I didn't think he deserved to have the family at the end. So I had that happen, and then I switched gears. Kimball, I felt that after that happened, anybody who gets off on a murder charge the way Kimball would, I mean, as Bobby pointed out, Sam Shepard wrote a book, so it seemed only logical that Richard Kimball would write a book. I had Richard Kimball. The next thing we saw was Richard Kimball is at a book signing in Los Angeles, and who shows up to have him sign a book but Karen from Never Wave Goodbye. And he is very surprised to see Karen. A lot of people surmised that Karen probably either pined away for him or she went back and she married that really boring doctor. I've never really understood why anybody would think that she would marry that doctor when she clearly had said she didn't love him. So I thought, let's settle this once and for all. So I had it where Karen showed up. She's married. She's pregnant, but she's not married to the doctor. She's married to another guy, and she's very happy. And Kimball was happy for her. And we then find out that Kimball is going to be concluding his book tour in St. Louis because he found out that Amy, who actually took a bullet for him, moved back there. And he was going to look her up. And so the next thing I had was that Richard Kimball is full-blown celebrity now, and he's appearing on television. It seemed only logical that he ought to be on a talk show on TV, so he's on The Dick Cavett show telling Mr. Cavett all about his books, because he's now got two books. We find out that he not only wrote the first book, but he successfully did file a lawsuit for wrongful arrest and conviction against the state of Indiana and the city of Stafford, and he won. He got a very good settlement from them. And so he was on there, and we find out that Amy is sitting in the audience, and he turns out he married Amy. I remember, as I had thought back to all the ladies that he encountered along the way, and it seemed Amy was the best one. She was the only one who actually took a bullet for him. And she's the only person he actually showed any remorse about Helen to. So,
well, Kitty, that's a happy ending for everybody.
Yes, except for Gerard.
He didn't deserve a happy ending.
No,
Dave. I think why don't we take our break now, and then we'll come back with our next part.
I was just about to say those very words.
Okay.
Quick time out, folks. Stick around. We'll be back in about 1 minute. Talk more Fugitive on Sherevision Radio.
Hear the music you love from the past. All the memories you cherish will last. Listen and you'll agree, it's the place you wanna be. It's KSAV. Never far away, at work or at play. Hear the sounds that you love every day. We play the sounds of today and yesterday. So stay with KSAV. Whether on the go or in your home, you'll hear songs of yesterday. KSAV, we'll be with you to warm the day in every way. So share the music of KSAV. Listen to us, we know you'll agree. It's the place you want to be for songs that fill the day. It's KSAV. Stay with KSAV.
Once there was a way to get back home. Once there was a way to get back home. Sleep, pretty darling, do not cry. And I will sing a lullaby.
Closing moments, the waning moments, perhaps we should say, of Talkin' Fugitive. And you can still join in, 800-407-5728, but let's get right back to the action. So, Bobby, you take over again.
Okay. Kitty, you want to wrap this up for a few minutes and then send it back to me, and we'll go on.
Yeah. And, you know, that music that we chose, I thought of both Kimball and Gerard as I thought of that music, because the whole thing of once there was a way to get back home. And basically, I was thinking of that in terms of Gerard and Carry That Weight for both of them, because, you know, this is something that Gerard's got to always deal with. He lost his family, and you know, Gerard also appears on the TV show with Kimball, much to Kimball's chagrin. And we find out that that Gerard lost his job. Basically, he got completely disgraced, and no other police department wants him because they don't want to deal with his stigma of chasing an innocent man all over the country when he didn't do something as simple as dust for fingerprints at the crime scene. And so he's very much alone. It's established, he tells he says on there that Marie Gerard has since married somebody else. The idea of reconciling was totally out of the question for her, and she has moved on, and he's doing the best he can to try to have some kind of a relationship with his kids. And as for Kimball, he and Amy have walked off into the sunset, and they've just found out that they're going to be parents. So it's sort of an all's well that ends well, but everybody ends up carrying that weight to a certain degree at the end.
Well, I have to say I like your ending a lot better than the one they did on the show.
Yeah. And, and again, both of those stories are on the website, and they are also in our fourth book.
Absolutely. Well worth reading to get even more details. All righty. Thank you very much, Kitty. Let's move on to part two of the show. Our radio program ends tonight, but some things will continue. The Fugitive Views and Reviews is still open, and will continue that way for the foreseeable future. We are currently reposting original reviews dating back to Season 1 and posting brand new screen caps on our homepage, thanks to David Addington, who is doing screen caps for us these days. So check us out frequently. Things are changing there every day. We now have 4 Fugitive Views and Reviews books out. They are, as always, available on many Internet bookseller sites, such as Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And last but surely not least, by incredible public demand, the 3 of us will not be disappearing from Internet radio. Instead, we'll be moving on to see if we can destroy another very famous and beloved TV series that predates The Fugitive by 4 years. Talking Twilight Zone premieres right here, same place, same day, same time, same format, and same people, but not Dave, who for some reason thinks there's something better to do on Tuesday evenings. It all starts in 4 weeks on May the 19th. We hope you will join us and continue to tune in right here on KSAV. In this part of our final show, I thought we would go back and cover some familiar territory, such as what episodes we think were the very best. Is there one ultimate episode that stands above everything else? Our choices for best actor and actress. And, of course, those famous Kimball girlfriends. But I want to start out by asking something new of Ken. Which of the 4 seasons was the best? I checked Ed Robertson's book before airtime, and the fact is, there are classic stories in all of the first 3 seasons. I believe we can leave Season 4 out of this discussion. So, Ken, what do you think? Season 1 has Never Wave Goodbye and Nightmare at North Oak and Search in a Windy City. Season 2 has Escape into Black and The End is But the Beginning and May God Have Mercy. Season 3 has Landscape with Running Figures and The 2130 and several others. Is it possible to choose one season? And if you could have only one, which season would you choose?
Well, I have to go with our book and the poll results and my own ratings and what episodes affected me the most. I would put season 1, Never Wave Goodbye, The Search in the Windy City, The End Game, I like that one. Obviously, Nightmare at North Oak, Home is the Hunted. And just the overall feeling of Season 1, I was upset with the pilot episode, you know that, but I was very much touched and captured by Never Wave Goodbye. And
refresh my memory, why were you upset with the pilot?
Oh, we've talked about that at length. They just jumped right into Fear in a Desert City.
Not enough background.
Yeah, there's no... we just see Kimball get off the bus.
Right.
The narrator telling us everything.
Right,
in my opinion, that's not the way to start.
We should have seen it.
You should start in the home of Richard and Helen. Introduce the characters.
Right.
Go from there. They have the argument. Then they come back. You introduce all the characters in that first show. Donna's in that episode.
Right.
A little bit more of Gerard. Anyway, we've talked about that before. But as far as the seasons... Obviously, Season 1, I would say, is my favorite. Then I'll have to tell you, Bob, according to the ratings, Escape into Black came in at number 1 out of 120. According to our poll results, it's in our book. So I'll have to put Season 2 after Season 1, and I'm sorry to disappoint you. Even though Season 3 is good, and there's a lot of touching stories there, I'll have to put that at number 3.
I can't argue with that. Escape into Black is my second favorite episode of the series. It's really outstanding, so I agree with that. And isn't May God Have Mercy also in Season 2?
Yes, episode 55, right in there or so.
Right, so it's hard to ignore that. But how about season three? I mean, Landscape with Running Figures is in there.
Yeah.
That's quite impressive, as is the 2130. So do you think that they, you know, we complain a lot about, and we had a discussion on the board about ending certain seasons and how we weren't happy with the episodes they chose to end each season. They did very poorly on that, with the exception of the end game, which I thought was a good one to end with. Do you think they did a pretty good job overall in taking, what are we looking at here? Are we looking at about a dozen classics, do you think, in spreading them out over those three seasons?
I counted 15 as
okay.
a classic.
Okay.
And then I would say about another 30 to 35
right.
as average to good.
Right.
But I'm sorry to say, over the whole 120, and you look at our poll results, and it's in our book, we list them from number 1 through number 120. I would say about 60, which is about half, are poor to downright awful.
That's amazing.
And that should have never have happened, Bob. I mean, the executive producers, when they started this series, should have laid out is it a 3-year plan or a 4-year plan? And this is what we're going to do in season 1. Then we're going to carry over to season 2 and season 3. And you know what, guys? We need to come up with an end game to the series. We can't just expect to go 10 seasons, you know, Kimball running all over the place, getting kidnapped, shot at, you know, almost touching the one-armed man, and then he loses him again. Gerard almost gets Kimball and loses again. I mean, if they had a 4-year plan, and if they had really brainstormed how to do the series, you know, season 1, you introduce all the characters, Kimball's on the run, fine, we get a lot of stories. Season 2, you go up a notch higher, which they did, which is Escape into Black. And then season 3, we get some really good stories, even touching with Donna. And then season 4, you start that thread line, and you know, you let the audience know, this is our final season. You imagine the numbers on Thursday night?
Absolutely.
The final season, you start with that first episode, you reveal some clues, Kimball's getting closer and closer, and then not quite yet. And then halfway through season 4, you get some new revelations. If you look in our season 4 book, I just went after Quinn Martin, and I sent him a memo, and even I suggested my own version of an ending. Why not introduce new characters? You know, the tiresome stories that we saw in season 4 really upset, you know, you and me. We just couldn't get through it. We were in agony. We had seen the kidnapping. We had seen the thugs. We had seen Kimball save the lady in distress. We saw it. Then they brought back Gilbert Rowland in one of those episodes. He had died in season 1. And they brought him back to play another character. Oh, my God. And then they brought back repeat guest stars, Carol Rosen, again and again and again. And so, you know, we said, where is it going? What are you doing with season 4? We got so upset. And my suggestion was to Quinn Martin was, hey, introduce Gerard's got a sidekick, you know, a lieutenant who's helping him out. The audience is interested. What is this guy going to do to find Kimball? You get more stories with Donna. You get Kimball's mother in there. You get Ray. And you know what I suggested also? We find out that the one-armed man has an ex-wife. And there's a motive to the crime, not just some hapstance burglary that night where he just knocks out Helen. But Fred Johnson was in that house for a reason. That's a new revelation. The audience is stunned. You come to a final climax in the final 2 episodes, and you find out the motive. You get the fingerprints. You get the proof. That's what we needed at the end. We never got the real proof. Then you have a final courtroom scene, and then Gerard has eggs all over his face, and Kimball does. And then you start the thread line also with the romance, maybe around halfway through season 4. Get the romance. Bring it to a touching conclusion. The audience is on their seat. Will Kimball get the right girl? You know, and then in that final scene, he does get the right girl. And
I wish that you and Kitty had been running the show. It would have looked a lot better. Let's let Kitty in here. Kitty, you have a favorite season as well, the first three?
Well, you know, I would have to agree with Ken on this because I think I've always thought that the first season was the best season. And, you know, and I would rank them the same, 1, 2, 3. And the one thing that sticks out in my mind about season 4, what I find so tragic about it, is that at the end of season 3, and they had the Emmys, and it won the Emmy for Best Dramatic Series. And it's like all of a sudden everybody just decided to sit back on their laurels and say, oh, well, since we've now shown we're the best dramatic series on TV, we don't have to try very hard. Let's just grab a bunch of old scripts and rehash them. That is probably the most discouraging thing about season 4, is that so many of those stories were stories that we had seen before. And the one that was probably the worst offender was the one that had Jack Lord in it, you know, very good actor, but they had taken this script, they called it Goodbye My Love, and it was almost literally the show, the episode The Garden House from season 1, it was almost word for word. They just made just a couple of slight variations on it, and I thought this is really sad, because if we had never seen The Garden House, I probably would have given this a good rating, because I thought the variations that they made to it made it a little bit of a better story. But I just couldn't be forgiving, because I thought, how could you do this? How could you just rehash this? You got a talented guy like Jack Lord, give him something better to do than just rehashing an old script. And, you know, and I agree with Ken. I mean, certainly we could have started creating a thread. In fact, the thread could have, what really would have given intrigue to this show, and I brought this up in my final review, was that in season 3, when Kimball had Fred Johnson cornered, and he just asked him point blank, did you kill my wife? I mean, imagine what would have happened all over the country with everybody watching the show if the one-armed man had nodded his head no, that he didn't kill her. And then if Kimball had said, wait a minute, you were in my house. I know you were in my house. Do you know who killed my wife? Did you see who killed my wife? And he could have nodded yes and then passed out. Can you imagine what would have been going on in Vegas over whoever, you know, the bets that would have been getting played?
Well, that would have fit in right exactly with what Ken wanted, which was to have not be just a random burglary.
Yeah, and
but there'd be a real story, a real conspiracy behind it.
And the thing, and the reason why that would have worked was because the producers, they set this up so well. Because at the beginning, in the first episode, when the narrator comes on and he says, Richard Kimball is heading to death row, the problem is he couldn't prove what he saw that night. He came home and he saw a one-armed man running from his house. Now, that doesn't prove anything. The narrator never said that the one-armed man killed his wife. We were all just left to presume that the one-armed man killed his wife, but nobody ever said the one-armed man actually killed his wife, you know? And so you had this great setup to where it could have been that the one-armed man was simply a witness to the crime, that maybe he saw a very upstanding citizen, like, say, Lloyd Chandler off Helen, and he figured that with his rap sheet a mile long, nobody would believe him if he went to the police and told them what he actually saw. So, you know, the possibilities there were endless. And I also agree with Ken, they certainly had an opportunity to start a thread in season 4. I know everybody hates that episode, Breaking of the Habit, where we had, you know, this is one of the very few times where we, other than when Donna came back for other appearances, another character came back, Eileen Heckert came back as Sister Veronica, and he had a line on Fred Johnson, and he wanted Sister Veronica to go check it out. Well, at the end, they get there, and Fred Johnson's already left town. And they said, well, we don't know where he went. And she has to, you know, very dejectedly tell him that, I'm sorry, nobody knows where he went. He's already gone. But what if somebody had said, well, I know where he was going. You know, she could have walked out, and she could have said, well, Dr. Kimball, this isn't much, but they said he was headed to this place. that would have given him a place to go, you know, a place to start checking other leads. I mean, you could have really had, that could have been the perfect start to the end of the series.
Well, you know, Kenny, you know what I think is at work here in television in general is that they're just interested in staying on the air, making money, getting sponsors, and lasting. I don't think that producers of TV series take as much interest in it as fans do, as we do. They would never sit there and come up with all this stuff because they were doing perfectly well with what they were doing. So why get involved in conspiracies and all kinds of other things? It's just laziness. You're just not going to do it because everything was working just fine. I think that that really is behind it. But I have to say this, that I agree with you and Ken. As much as I like certain episodes in the second and third seasons, I think it's that first one that really grabs your attention. I mean, I love Searching a Windy City, and, of course, Never Wave Goodbye is a classic, and Nightmare North Earth was always been a favorite. It's hard to turn that down. So if I had to pick one season, I agree. So I think we can all agree that season one was the right way to begin and absolutely sets up everything is to come. Okay, we've got a little more left. Dave, you want to take our final break? And
when we come back,
we have some special news.
I think that since we're all in agreement on something for the first time, let's take a time out. We'll come back for the final segment of Talkin' Fugitive here on Retro Radio.
If you've enjoyed Talkin' Fugitive over the last few years, then be sure to stick around when KSAV will bring you a new program based on the television classic Twilight Zone. Same episode-by-episode analysis, same in-depth discussion, same interesting and provocative hosts. And it takes place at the same time and channel, so no adjustment of either your computer or your schedule is required. Just keep listening every other Tuesday to KSAV, the reason your computer came with speakers.
And after, what, 4 years, 5 years, 78 programs, we're down to the last 20 minutes. So let's not waste one of them. Let's get right back to the action. Bobby?
Okay, we have one segment left to go. And for anyone out there listening who thinks that it's about time, that we've been on the air too long, here's proof that you may be right. We have someone to congratulate tonight, and that's Ken, who became a proud grandfather just yesterday with the birth of baby boy Tyler. Ken was a young man when this show began, and now he's a grandfather. Need I say more? We've been here for a while. I just have one question, Ken. Will you be sitting little Tyler on your lap one day and telling him all about The Fugitive and urging him to watch it? Because after all, we're not all going to be here forever, so we need to pass this along to future generations.
The very first book he's going to read is Volume 1 of The Fugitive, Views and Reviews.
Good.
Perfect. Perfect. Get him off to a good start, that's for sure. And remember, all of our shows are archived, so he can listen to them, too.
Yeah.
Okay. Before we move on to our last segment, and because I know there won't be time at the end, let me take a few minutes to thank everyone for the past 3.5 years, starting with KSAV, who gave 3 people who knew nothing about running a radio program virtually unrestricted time to do things and say things they wanted to say with virtually no interference. And also, thanks very much to both Dave and Dan for keeping us on our toes and on the air. My extreme thanks to my co-host, Kitty, who has been with me from day one, both at the group and here on the show. There is no way on earth I ever would have done any of this without her by my side. Trust me, she is the number one reason we are still here tonight. And of course to Ken, who was the first regular multi-time caller we had on this show back when we started, so much so that we asked if he wanted to be a co-host. It's a good thing he said yes, because Ken, and only Ken, is responsible for getting our 4 fugitive books on the market. I never dreamed such a thing could or would ever happen, and Ken is the person who made that dream come true. And last but certainly not least, our profound thanks to someone who has never been on this show and is virtually unheard of, and that is Liv, who lives in Norway and has been with us from the beginning and worked tirelessly for years in creating, updating, and running our Talking Fugitive website, where you can hear most of our prior shows, with the exception of the first dozen or so, which we lost, and even view the sneak previews and screen caps from them in their original form. Liv has never asked for a thing in return, not credit, not anything, but tonight we need to thank her for an absolutely brilliant job in creating and running that website, which will continue to be open for the foreseeable future. Nobody does this alone, and I'm living proof of that. I've been incredibly fortunate to be surrounded by so many talented people who made it possible for a simple Yahoo discussion group to grow the way it has. And now it is time for us to assign our final rating to the series, taking into account everything, the good, the bad, the awful. Where does this series fit in? People often call it the best TV series ever. In fact, Dave has started a lot of these shows by saying The Fugitive is the best TV show ever. But is it? Let's start with Ken. Give us a number and tell us why.
I've got to go according to our books. And let me just also say thanks, Bob, for letting me get on the radio.
My pleasure.
That was a privilege, because I kept calling in and calling in, so you finally got frustrated and said, get him on here. So. And thanks, Kitty, for your support. We've had lunch together 3 times. I've met your husband, so thanks
actually,
for all the
support.
Actually,
we've had breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Yeah. And
you met my mom.
And also, the books wouldn't have been possible without your name on the cover, too, because I don't think I could have done that alone. And obviously, you know, those 4 books I'm really proud of. There's 495,000 words in those books, and it's 1,300 pages combined. So if you want to hear our rambling and ranting and our suggestions and our crying, and also we have some praises in there, you got to buy the 4 books.
That's right.
And then also, one last thing, Dave, I've got to put in a plug for Susan Oliver. So anybody out there who has not seen Never Wave Goodbye, please download it somewhere, get it. You got to watch those 2 episodes. Okay, that's my final plug. And then my final rating for the series, I'm going to go with the poll results, and like I said, I'd say about 60 episodes out of the 120 are good to classics, and then the other 60 are from poor to downright lousy and terrible and awful. I'll be nice, and I'll say 5.5 rating series for this drama series. I am a fan. I'm glad I watched. So I would say that, Bob. What do you think?
Well, on a scale of 0 to 10, that's right in the middle, and that's kind of low for somebody who spent almost 4 years of his life talking about it. I wonder how long you would have spent out of your life if you give it a 10. But I have to agree, there are problems. But before I give my own final rating, let's find out what the Kitty thinks. Kitty, what about a final number?
Well, I would say that when people say it's the best TV show ever, I would say, you know, I asked that question in my final review, and I said, no, I don't think it's the greatest show to ever hit the airwaves of television. But I did think it was classic because it had a very strong concept to it. It's a concept that was picked up by many other shows in later decades. It's the concept was picked up by the show Kung Fu, The Incredible Hulk, and The Pretender later on. So this is a very strong concept that it had, and I thought it really deserved points for that. I'm not as hard on some of the shows that you two hate. I was not as rough on season 4 episodes as you two were. You know, mainly because I tried to just look at them as self-contained episodes. But I would say that no, season 4 is not good. Just too many wasted opportunities there, and way too many rehashing of programs. But I would definitely say that the episodes that stick out with me, I think my number one episode is Search in a Windy City. I also like Never Wave Goodbye, and I don't agree with you about the end game being the final episode, being a good choice for the final episode of season one. I think Search in a Windy City or Never Wave Goodbye would have been better selections to have as the final episode.
Well, yeah, I won't argue with that. I would have liked that better, too. It's just that consider the other seasons are even worse when they ended. That's
why. I know, and I find that very sad, really.
Yeah.
But I would assign I assigned an 8 to it because I think there's a lot to like. There's a lot of things that I don't like, but you know, with the things that I really like, I think that kind of makes up for the really bad ones. But yeah, I think it's a classic series, but I don't think it's necessarily the greatest series of all time.
All right, well, let me chime in here. Usually when you and Ken vote on something and give numbers, I'm usually in between both of you, and so it is tonight. I couldn't go as low as a 5, because if I give it a 5, I have to wonder why I spent so much of my time doing this when there are shows on TV that probably would have deserved bigger numbers. On the other hand, Ken is right in what he says. Some of this, you know, a lot of squandered, wasted opportunities to really, if it's possible to have the greatest show ever, they wasted the opportunities that would have made it that. Personally, I don't believe in the concept of the greatest TV series, because I think tastes change. I mean, over a period of years, I've been watching TV since I was born. Shows in the 50s that were incredibly popular and incredibly good. Drama back then was live and was terrific. If it was presented today, people would laugh at it. It doesn't look right. It doesn't fit in this time period. So it's hard to carry from there over to here. I mean, you can't go that many years. If you brought Abraham Lincoln back as president today, he might not be so well liked. So you have to keep that in mind. So it's hard to compare anything. I'm going to give it a 7. I think that's a number I'm pretty confident with. But I share both of your opinions about what might have been. And now that I've been through this show today, I think that the ideas of both of you is great. I mean, if Ken had been running the show and had done the things he just mentioned, and then it had led into everything you wrote in your stories, I swear, I don't know that a TV show could possibly be better than that. But the trouble is, you know, TV is an underachiever. It always is. Nobody's really trying in TV to make it better. Just turn it on tonight, and you'll see that they're not even trying. If they did, it would be more fascinating than it is. So if you don't have people really working hard at it, you're not going to get, as fans and people who run this radio program, we have a bigger stake in it. We're really interested in making it better. So I think that these numbers kind of reflect everything. Let's put it this way. None of us hated it, or we wouldn't have been here. And I think those numbers reflect the problems. We only have a few minutes left. I want to ask one final question. I'll start with Ken. Ken, if I simply came up to you one day and I said, when you think of The Fugitive, this is other than Kimball and Gerard and the One-Armed Man, when you think of The Fugitive, what character in all four seasons comes into your mind immediately?
Beside those three main characters?
That's right.
Donna.
Why am I not surprised? I thought I made a fortune tonight on that.
as the audience and me as a fan, I'm devoting a half hour or an hour of my time in the evening to sit through a television program, and I consider myself, you know, intellectual, and I want to be entertained. If you're going to, you know, it's fiction, you know, we're beyond belief when we watch television, but we need entertainment from working hard all day. So if you're going to produce something and you're going to spend millions of dollars on a story and you're going to bring in characters and actors and all, give me the best of what you got. You're paying these guys a lot of money. You know, you have script writers. Don't give me a third-grade story. You know, give me something PhD level. You know, if it's obviously, if it's a drama series and it's on at 10 o'clock at night and I'm going to stay up because I have to get up early the next morning, I want to be entertained. I want a story. And that's all I ask for television. And you can see why a lot of television shows flop and don't even make it through 6 episodes, because it's just, you know, they have no clue what's going on. People turn it off. Now, to me, with The Fugitive, I didn't turn it off. I got hooked. But then, you know, to stay with the series, you know, that's why I said five and a half. And you know what, Bob, I'll change my mind. I'll give it a six just to be nice on a happy note, okay?
Why Donna? She was hardly in it.
Well, she just affected me. She was the loving sister. She brought the emotion. Home as the Hunted is a good start, but those other two appearances just really got me.
I'll tell you, Ken, she affected you all right, and I think I know exactly what the effect was that it had.
Kitty, is there a name that comes to you right away when you think of The Fugitive?
You know, not really. I mean, I guess I don't really think necessarily of one character. I think of characters that stood out. I mean, obviously there was Donna, but I think of Ray, and I think of Karen and Amy and Mike Decker. You know, those were very strong characters. You know, but as for one significant character that sticks out after the three of them, not really.
Well, I got to say that for me, I hate to admit this, but it's always been Karen. I was completely smitten with Karen. There's something about that story, and it's really, really heartbreaking at the end when they part on the beach. I agree with you, Kitty. That would have made an awesome end of the season. That certainly would have gotten you through the summer and made you wonder what was going to happen later on. And we've debated before whether or not it would have been wise for Karen to be brought back later. I don't know. I can't really take a position on that because I like her character a lot. And I think she, although I'm perfectly happy with your version and Richard Kimball going off into the rest of his life with Amy, because I think she's a perfect doctor's wife. I think she's probably a better doctor's wife than Karen would have been.
Oh, absolutely. I agree. That was part of the reason why I chose Amy, was because Karen was very much a person who lived her life by the water. And, you know, part of the reason she liked Kimball initially was because he was there working in the sales shop. You know, the doctor that she was dating bored her. Now, if she had met him as just Dr. Richard Kimball and had never worked in the sales shop, I'm not sure we would have seen, you know, those kinds of sparks fly. I mean, she needed to be with somebody who had the same kinds of interests as she did, which was how I had her end up.
All right. Well, I agree with that, but I have to agree with Ken about Donna. Donna is special. Donna cares about Richard Kimball more than anybody in the world.
Okay, we've got one minute left, and my favorite character was that woman that Kimball was going to face execution rather than the rest of his life with.
Donna was absolutely awesome, and everybody should have a sister like that. I know, because I did have a sister like that. So to have anybody care about you that way, it means everything. Okay, we're just about at the end here, and I thanked everybody, but I really need to thank all the people who listened to this show. I don't know how many it was. I do know we have listeners in other countries because they've written to me and told me so. That's really quite an amazing thing to realize, that people took the time out to listen to us and to give our opinions the way we did. It really is quite amazing. Gratitude to everybody, like I said earlier, to Kitty and to Ken and to you, Dave. Dave, thanks for putting up with us for so long and for being here, because I wouldn't have known what I was doing if you hadn't been here.
So, and you know, and thanks also to Ed Robertson, who wanted to talk to us initially on your show. That's how it all got started, was that we called in and talked to Ed.
All right, that's the way it was so long ago. All right, folks, you've heard it. 70-something, the episode, it's come to an end. So thanks to everybody for being with us. And remember, you heard it on KSAV, Share a Vision Radio.
Thank you, Dave. Goodbye.
Bye.